Good morning. It's Sunday, January 26th, and welcome to Higher IQ. If you're listening to this from bed, good. Stay there for a few more minutes. Seriously. New research published this week suggests that might be one of the best things you can do for yourself. Today we're talking about the surprisingly small lifestyle changes that add years to your life, why sleeping in on weekends might actually protect your mental health, the real math on credit card debt, the ongoing tension between what workers want and what CEOs are planning, and what it's actually like inside the world's most exclusive conference. No politics, just stuff that might actually change how you think about your week. Let's get into it. A study published this week in eClinical Medicine followed nearly 60,000 people in the UK for 8 years, tracking their sleep, exercise, and diet through wearables and surveys. The question was simple. How much do you actually have to change to live longer? The answer might surprise you. Adding just 5 extra minutes of sleep, 2 more minutes of moderate exercise, and a couple extra tablespoons of vegetables per day, that's it, could theoretically add a full year to your life expectancy for people with poor lifestyle habits. Scale that up a bit. 24 extra minutes of sleep, 4 more minutes of exercise, and an additional cup of vegetables, plus a serving of whole grains, and you're looking at 4 additional years of what researchers call health span, meaning years free of cardiovascular disease, dementia, and diabetes. The biggest finding wasn't about any single behavior. It was about the combination. Trying to improve just one thing in isolation doesn't move the needle much. If you only focused on sleep and changed nothing else, you'd need to sleep 60% more each day to get that same 1 year benefit. Diet alone wasn't enough to make a statistically significant difference. But when you layer small improvements together, a little more rest, a little more movement, slightly better food, the effects compound. The lead researcher put it this way: these behaviors are deeply interconnected. We've all had that night where we didn't sleep well, and the next day we're reaching for chips instead of going for a walk. The study suggests that working on all three, even in tiny increments, is far more powerful than perfecting just one. And if you're under 25, here's some even better news about your weekend sleep habits. A separate study from the University of Oregon found that teenagers and young adults who catch up on sleep over the weekend are significantly less likely to report symptoms of depression. Sleep researchers have long recommended 8 to 10 hours at a consistent time every day, but the study's authors acknowledged that's just not realistic for most young people juggling school, work, social lives, and everything else. The findings suggest that weekend recovery sleep, yes, sleeping in on Saturday and Sunday, offers real mental health protection. It's one of the first studies to look at this in American adolescents specifically, and it validates what a lot of people are already doing instinctively. Now let's talk about something that's probably causing more stress than sleep deprivation for a lot of people: credit card debt. Bankrate released their annual debt report this month, and the numbers are sobering. About 61% of cardholders with balances have been in debt for at least a year, up from 53% last year. That includes 31% who've carried debt for 3 years or more, and 21% who've been in debt for at least 5 years. The average household is carrying just under $11,000 in credit card debt, and with average APRs hovering around 24%, that debt is expensive. Let's do the math on what that actually means. If you have $11,000 in credit card debt at 24% interest and you're only making minimum payments, typically around 2% of your balance, you're looking at paying about $220 a month. Sounds manageable, right? But at that rate, it would take you over 7 years to pay it off, and you'd pay roughly $8,500 in interest alone. That's nearly 80% of your original balance just in interest. The total cost of that $11,000 in purchases becomes almost $20,000. This is why financial advisors are practically begging people to pay more than the minimum. Even an extra $100 a month cuts your payoff time in half and saves you thousands. The silver lining, if there is one: interest rates are expected to continue falling in 2026, which creates opportunities. Balance transfer cards with 0% introductory rates can effectively freeze your debt while you pay it down, but only if you actually use that window to eliminate the balance, not just shift it around. One credit counselor quoted in the report put it simply, "Far more important than your income is your discipline." Speaking of work, let's talk about the ongoing standoff between employees and executives over where that work happens. The data on remote work keeps piling up, and it consistently shows the same thing. Workers are happier and often more productive when they have flexibility. A recent survey found that 74% of employees feel happier working remotely, with many citing the lack of commute, more time with family, and better work-life balance. Remote workers save an average of 72 minutes per day by not commuting, and research shows they're reinvesting about 40% of that saved time back into their jobs. But here's the tension. A KPMG survey of over 1,300 global CEOs found that 64% believe everyone will be back in the office full-time by 2026. Even more striking, 87% of those CEOs said they're more likely to give raises, promotions, and favorable assignments to employees who come into the office. That's a significant disconnect. Workers say flexibility is the most important factor in whether they stay at a job, more important than salary, while executives are quietly building incentive structures that reward physical presence. The compromise for now seems to be hybrid work. About 28% of companies currently require 3 days in the office, with another 13% requiring 4. But if you're fully remote and love it, the data suggests you should be paying attention to how your company talks about office culture. The phrase "return to office" is showing up in more corporate communications, and the people pushing for it have a lot of power over your career trajectory. Finally, let's end with something a little lighter. The World Economic Forum wrapped up in Davos this week. That's the annual gathering where billionaires, heads of state, and CEOs descend on a tiny Swiss ski town to talk about the future of everything. You've probably seen headlines about the speeches and the geopolitics, but the behind-the-scenes reality of Davos is almost more interesting than the official programming. For starters, the logistics are absurd. The conference has completely outgrown the town. Traffic is gridlocked with black SUVs, and there's serious talk of moving the whole thing somewhere else. Local businesses rent out their storefronts for the week at eye-popping rates. One clothing boutique owner turned down 50,000 Swiss francs, about $63,000, to let a company use her shop as a meeting space. She wanted to stay open for locals. A hostel bed in a shared room reportedly went for 800 euros a night. Private chalets run around $140,000 for the week. Companies completely gut retail spaces and rebuild them as branded lounges. Pinterest's was apparently the most aesthetically impressive this year, though Qualcomm's had the longest lines for some reason. Indonesia's national pavilion turned into what one attendee described as basically a nightclub on the final evening. And French President Emmanuel Macron had to wear aviator sunglasses all week due to a burst blood vessel in his eye, which inadvertently sent the Italian sunglasses maker's stock up 70% and crashed their website from order volume. The actual work of Davos happens mostly in what they call bilats, bilateral meetings that take place outside the main programming. The schedules are brutal. Structured breakfasts at 7:30 a.m., panels all day, then parties that don't start until 10 p.m. Multiple attendees said people just don't sleep all week. Which, given what we learned earlier about the importance of rest, seems like exactly the wrong approach to discussing the world's problems. That's your briefing for this Sunday. Rest up, move a little, eat something green. And as always, stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.